Member Week is here at Lowe's. Don't miss your chance to get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, stain, tools, flooring, and more. Shop our exclusive deals happening in-store and online from May 8th through May 14th. Not a member? Join My Lowe's Pro Rewards for free today and get ready to save more. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Turned Out of Punk Splits. I'm your host, Damian Abraham. And once again, we are bringing back not one, but two or more in this case, former guests of the show to talk about punk. They may or may not know each other, but there's always a great conversation coming out of it. And today on the show, three people that definitely know each other, Stephen and Jeff McDonald from The Gods, Red Cross, and the director of the fantastic documentary about them, Andrew Reich. All three of these people are three of the greatest guests that have ever been on this show. All their episodes are incredible. Stephen, of course, is a foundation of Turned Out of Punk. He is one of the support beams on which this house was built. So anytime Stephen agrees to come back to the show, it's going to be a good time. And of course, his brother, Jeff McDonald, is arguably one of the coolest people ever. So I'm going to say it right here, right now, probably one of my favorite episodes I've ever done this podcast. I might want to say my favorite episode, but I don't want to give these guys that ego boost. So this is one of my favorite episodes because holy crap, this thing is funny. It's jam-packed with trivia and goodness. And I don't want to talk it up too much. You're going to listen to it in 1 second, but I'm happy you get to hear it. We are all here, though, because there is this fantastic documentary, Born Innocent, The Red Cross Story, which if you have not seen this thing, it is one of my favorite rock and roll documentaries of all time. And it's probably going to be one of yours, I imagine. It is available now for rent all over the world. So if you're listening to this in a place where they haven't had a screening, you can go and see this thing now over at redcrossfilm.com/rent. So head on over to that website and watch it for yourself. Also, if you are in the UK, you are very lucky because Red Cross, one of the world's greatest bands, is going to be coming over to the UK in the fall, in the end of August. So you can get tickets all for that stuff over at redcross.com without the film. They also have a link to the film there too. So you can just head to redcross.com and it's like a one-stop shop. Pick up some records, watch a movie, buy some tickets for an upcoming show if you're in the UK. You know, you got a whole afternoon planned for you there. And if you want to get in touch with this podcast, turnedoutapunkpodcast@gmail.com, run by Tristan, my brother and show producer. And you can find out stuff over there. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Andrew Reich, Stephen McDonald, Jeff McDonald on Turned Out a Punk. Stephen, Jeff, Andrew, thank you all for coming back on the show.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us, Damian.
You know, if my first appearance was a dream come true, being here again with these guys is like, I could never have even imagined.
I feel like we're practically Damian's co-hosts at this point.
Oh, I wish. Believe me, there's a lot of times that I wish I could rely on you guys for some details that I'm lacking on my music history, but I feel like lucky that I get all three of you because I was watching the rollout for the movie and I was seeing some podcasts have all three of you on. I'm like, God damn it. I feel like there's more meat on those bones for us to pick at. So I'm glad we're all here together now to go into the carcass.
Well, that's cool. And you have to excuse my voice. I'm still recovering from Coachella.
Had to drop that in there, Jeff. I understand.
Yeah. Yes, I was screaming. I was being a fanboy for the Circle Jerks, and I lost my voice.
Who was the best group you saw? Because I saw on your Instagram, you took in a diverse array of entertainment this weekend.
Well, I mean, of course, I mean, without a doubt, it was Lady Gaga. But besides that, I really did enjoy the Circle Jerks performance, and which was strange because I realized I hadn't seen them since before their first album came out. I was with my daughter Astrid and my son-in-law Kevin, and they're huge Circle Jerks fans, and I'm like, I haven't actually seen them before Group Sex came out. It's like, so this is like new for me.
You haven't seen them since before Group Sex.
Yeah. I haven't seen them. I saw like the first couple of shows, and then it's like, no.
So would you say they've spent that time wisely?
Yeah, they were great. They were great, but there's just a couple of new members in the band that I didn't recognize.
Well, yeah, new members as in like only 40 years or something in the band.
There was no Lucky Lear, and the bass player, the one who passed away, Roger was his name.
Roger Rogerson.
Yeah, I think he died like whatever, 45 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah,
but they were great. So it was great. You know, it was a good scene.
But now, would you lobby for the return of Lucky Lear? I mean, considering that band exists because of Lucky Lear. In some ways, I would say, because at least I like to make it about us, that our rejection of Lucky Lear as a member of Red Cross helped to was sort of the catalyst for the formation of that band.
Well, I noticed that you know, some of the signature drum licks were all good and solid, but they weren't played with as much gusto. Like the drum roll on Skank. I Just Want Some Skank.
The
new guy did it, but he didn't do it with the full attack.
Okay.
But he was solid, very solid.
What is it, still Joey Castillo? Do you know, Damian?
Yeah, still Joey. And Joey, you would have known from Wasted Youth, right? Back in the day?
Well, no, because we knew the original drummer of Wasted Youth.
We discovered him as well.
Alan Steritz. I don't think I realized that Joey was in Wasted Youth. That's cool. I know him from all the desert rock bands.
Yeah. Cause I think he did, I think you're right. Like, I think he's on the metal record or maybe even like a later.
Gotcha.
When did you let go of the beef with the Circle Jerks, Jeff?
this past weekend.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like this. No. The beef has turned to nothing but pride. Yeah. I was very proud of them. The beef was only.
Where's the beef?
The beef was brief, but then they weren't at first not really playing my kind of music for many years. I had to be turned on to hardcore music by my children. Essentially, I was a snob.
Does that make us not eligible as to be on the podcast? Jeff only recently got into hardcore.
Well, I really was digging. You know, another good band at Coachella was Speed.
Speed's awesome. A lot of fun live.
They were really good.
Yeah.
And so Coachella's nice because I got to get Speed, and then go, and then right after that, their set, I got to go see Jenny from Blackpink. And where else can you experience stuff? An experience that's like the old timey Bill Graham bills.
Yeah.
Well, also, you had a delightful experience because you had such great parking, right?
You had the best parking.
Did they give you backstage passes all weekend, or did you just get them for the
weekend? Yeah, we had backstage passes for
the Go-Go's,
all six shows.
But the Go-Go's didn't get you shit.
No. Steven helped to get the full credentials. You helped with the parking.
It has to do with, your own efforts, too. The fact that Red Cross
original scene.
Yeah. Red Cross played some of the first ever Golden Voice shows. I'm just the person that reminds them.
I heard a rumor that Golden Voice actually got its name from the strain of weed that they used to maybe partake in the distribution of.
Well, I know that Gary Tovar, the founder of Golden Voice, I think that he would. Maybe that's what it was. He had like a couple of pounds of Golden Voice in the trunk of his car after a Jane's Addiction show in the late 80s. And I don't know, hilarity ensued. And then I think he got into some kind of trouble for that. And then, so maybe there's some truth to that. I'd always heard there was a weed connection with Gary Tovar's story of his tangle with the law.
Well, I remember smoking weed with Terry Govar.
Terry Govar?
Gary Tovar. At the Vex in Los Angeles, Vex Theater.
Which Vex?
I smoked Greg Ginn and during, I think it was like the first Husker Du show with Black Flag in Los Angeles.
Is that the one? Well, because there's actually footage of us smoking weed at the Vex in the first Love Dolls movie.
That was many years after.
Are you sure that wasn't the weed moment you're talking about? That it, was it? Because that same so kind was, of Husker Du era is like
this okay. weed was this weed was provided by Gary Tovar.
It was like, yeah, okay.
It was the Golden Voice. You're smoking on that Golden Voice.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was probably experienced the Golden Voice.
Well, and I'm just trying to like put it together and say maybe it was captured on film.
Oh, damn.
The weed that was smoked in the Love Dolls movie that was filmed at the other Vex, that was purchased in Inglewood, California.
Okay. At Mr. P's?
Yes.
that was a liquor store in Inglewood, Mr. P's. And it was like if you struck out on every count, if you tried George Fisher and that didn't work, and our Leighton or Tom LaPlay, these are all of our old connections in Hawthorne who had like the killer skunk bud. If they weren't answering the phone, then you would end up at this liquor store in either Inglewood or there was one in Lenox on 111th Street. And
in Inglewood, we bought Colombian from Junior. It was that was our Beretta. Those were our Beretta moments.
That's amazing. So was that some name that we had gotten? Like, yeah, just ask for Junior.
No, I remember the name. And I still talk to Jeannie, who lived on that block. So we kind of reminisce about those times. So my memories are refreshed.
But wait, Junior was in Lenox, but she lived near Mr. P's in Inglewood.
No, Junior lived in Mr. P's in Inglewood.
Okay, that was the Mr. P's connection.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Oh, yeah.
It's all legal now, so it's fine, right? We're not blowing up anyone's spot.
it was such a hassle.
Yeah. But that was part of the adventure of the, you know, like it made the cannabis better, no matter how shitty it was, no matter how many seeds were in it or stems, because you had to go to so much work to get it.
Yeah. You had to know someone. It was really good to kind of teach you how to network.
Yeah. Up the street from my house now, there's four stores in the same block that sell weed.
Oh, yeah. Our old Chinese restaurant now is a weed store. It's bizarre. I never thought. Now I can't. I don't even. Weed turned on me years ago, so I don't get to enjoy the convenience.
Yeah. Weed is actually responsible in a roundabout way. That ties into the documentary, because the night that Steven and I recorded the original first Turned Out a Punk appearance of Steven, we finished recording the episode and I'm like, this is the greatest episode I've ever done. And I'd only done six up to that point. So, but it's still like one of the greatest episodes I've ever done. And then Steven's like, let's go smoke a joint. Let's just go smoke a joint right now. And I'm looking at my computer and I'm like, should I press save? I'm like, nah, fuck it. And we went out and smoked the joint, came back, and we had lost the file completely. But Steven,
of course,
thank God, agreed, and we re-recorded it the next night. And I'd say slightly less potentially libelous the second time we recorded it. We cut out some names the second time, but just as good, just as an impactful episode.
Wait, one technical thing. I just put in my earbuds. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So you actually remember the difference between the two interviews?
Yeah, because when we recorded the second time, I'm like, hey, when we get to the part when we talk about, we could say Courtney Love, because we still talk about that. Maybe don't tell this particular person's name in this particular context.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you for looking out for me. Well, why don't we just do that now? Because
we can tell it now.
Yeah. Now we've got nothing to lose. No, I'm kidding.
Well,
you
know,
you, I'm curious about, speaking of, you know, like very some of your fellow podcasters, I was hoping that Steve could get on the Billy Corgan podcast show and discuss his side jamming incident.
You know what? That's so funny because I just realized I want to be on that show too.
We want you on that show.
Well, Steven, you know, we should both be on it because we could talk. Because also the funny thing about my audition with his band Zwan was I was told to bring in a riff, and it didn't say, like, he didn't specify an original riff. And I brought in, I think it was the Flower Lady and her assistant from the Future album by the Seeds. And I just started playing the riff. But I think this Flower Lady, I forget which song it was, but the riff goes like this. It's a bitchin' riff. And then I remember, what's that drummer's name? Jimmy Chamberlain. He does this big drum fill, like he's about to get into it. And then he lands on two, not on one. So he automatically lands on the wrong beat and turns it from like a cool garage rock swampy jam to like this weird salsa kind of like syncopated. Like it was not cool at all. But then anyway, so then I later told them, but then we figured it out. And then Billy's like, cool riff, man. I was like, yeah, it's a Seed song. What? And he was like all kind of shocked that I played it, that I didn't bring in an original. I brought in a Seeds jam. But then like 4 years later, he's Mr. like Sky Saxon, Father Yod, and all
that. He got
this
really
stuff.
Into Father Yod. He got really into the Source family.
He was kind of fronting like he had been a huge fan all these years. And like, I want to call him out on that too. So he should definitely
think you're not going to have the opportunity now.
Because he's going to hear. No, I don't want to call him out, but it would be fun to recount those times and hear what his take was on it. And yeah, and we can ask him, because I'm sure I've told the side jam story many times, and I'm sure that was just my perspective. I mean, for all I know, he could have been like, no, your playing sucked. No, I like the side jamming. Your playing sucked. Or
I'm
you have
sure
bad breath.
The side jamming probably was the real issue.
And so just a little backstory was that I auditioned for Zwan. They kept calling me back like three times or so. And I really wanted the gig, you know, Red Cross had ended, and I thought I could step into a rock star band like the way Pat Smear had, I was hoping. At any rate, that didn't materialize, but it seemed like for a minute I was going to be in Billy Corgan's brand new band, but then they stopped calling. And I figured out, I later thought that it might have been when I let my personality show, and I told a story about how in Red Cross, we had a rule that no one was allowed to side jam, like sort of a la 38 special or whatever. And so when they were like, what's that? So I walked over to Billy and I placed my whole body, like back, ass, everything up against his side. And I started like side jamming, you know, like playing air guitar.
It's like it's like a thumbs up kind of move.
Yeah, it's very, or in the metal circuits, it's just like doing this constantly, or a Paul McCartney, hey man, thumbs up.
It's
or,
like the, you know, it's the Axl Slash pose too.
Well, that's more sinister. This, it's more like a happy-go-lucky,
like a Weekend Warrior kind of, you know.
It's like a Brad Gillis in,
it's very Night Ranger. It's very Night Ranger. It's very Rangers of Night. And,
I can see like the guy from Styx when he was in the band with Ted Nugent. What was that guy? Tommy Shaw. It's like a Tommy Shaw Ted Nugent move.
Well, to contextualize it, with the it wasn't a total non sequitur. We were having a conversation about the cultures of bands and the do's and the don'ts, and every band kind of has their own unique set. And that's when I tried to relate, like, oh, yeah, you mean like no side jamming? And they were like, looked at me puzzled, like, what's side jamming? So then I used Billy Corgan's body as my prop as I displayed an offensive side jam. And since I was contextualizing it, it's like this, yeah, this is an offensive move. I thought that it would be okay. But though I think the problem was that I actually touched his body with my entire body and my backside. And it just was one of those moments when I was like, the air was sucked out of the room because when I stepped away from his body and I turned around and I looked, it could have been my imagination, but it looked like the other dudes were like open mouthed, and Billy looked like v very stiff and uncomfortable. But I think that that's, you know, it was, the whole thing was hard to read. So it would be interesting to, you know, maybe, you know, reconnect 30 plus years later and see if he's recovered from that side jam, or
Well, too, yeah, I mean,
if it
since
had to find out, like, did it actually have anything to do with, you know, or was it my plane? Because these things are so ambiguous, you know, it's hard, you know, because people aren't always that straightforward, and they don't really tell you why they're not calling you back anymore. I mean, that's just something that everybody that's ever had to get a job knows, you know, and so, but this is a unique position, you know, because now podcasts are popular and he's a podcaster and Damien's made me someone of note in the podcast world. So maybe we could somehow parlay this into some answers 30 years later on,
You know, I think 30 years later, though, he may have looked at he might now interpret it as assault. So you might want to go there.
No, he's like he's a pro wrestler. He gets choke
Right.
slammed and shit, right?
Oh,
Like,
that's true. Okay.
So I don't have to
You're
worry. I don't have to worry about a potential cancellation from
No, I think you're good. I think also you being in Zwan would be like getting James Brown in the Mamas and the Papas. Like,
Yeah, you
it
mean
would
it
be.
was a wrong, it never was, or never
It
would have
would be
made
insane.
sense.
Like they'd be on stage doing the stare at your shoes move or play with
Oh,
like, you know, and you'd be
right.
like going off. It would be like it would
That's
never
true.
work.
Yeah, it would have been like moonwalking circles around
Yes.
him,
So it would have been real art.
like Buckethead or something. I'd be like, that is not precise. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, it would have been, I'm sure I was spared many bullets. It's all good, but it's so funny that Jeff had that. I mean, thousands of miles away from you know, we both had the same thought, but that I should be on it. But we should be on it together because you could go much deeper with him about the whole Father Yod and that world, and that would be I'd be interested to hear.
But
You know, could
I think that he was on the verge of joining that cult.
Billy was.
Yeah,
Like
I was
really
just
late, like really late in the day, like
yeah.
definitely not first generation Father Yod.
They're still followers of the Source family cult.
Wow,
True believers.
you can't keep a good cult down. I mean, there's still Manson followers. Yeah, it's like.
There are still Manson family members, like not just like teenagers that like worship Charles Manson, but like actual
Oh
adherents.
yeah. There are people who think of Charles Manson as the modern day philosopher, and they live their lives by, you know, his teachings.
And they actually have blood ties to the original scene.
Well, there's some there was this guy who believed he had blood ties to the original Charles Manson. He thought he was his son, and he looked like, and he spent his whole life, you know, as a musician, saying that he was quite possibly Charles Manson's son. Then I recently saw, you know, on YouTube, he had taken a DNA test, and somehow with another former member Manson test that was semi-related, and it was proved that he was most definitely not Charles' son. But the guy was really—he was like, you know—he lived in a trailer, and he was like a lifer musician, and he looked kind of like a Don Bowles meets Charles Manson. But unfortunately, the guy said he was relieved he wasn't Charles Manson's son after living as Charles Manson's son for many decades. But then he passed away, unfortunately. But you can find his tale on YouTube if you just do some.
He had a kid. The kid's name was Zizo Zos, I believe, right?
Was
Well, that's the
that
kid they talk about it, I think, in one of the Manson
him? You mean
books.
Charlie had a son?
Charlie had a kid, yeah, Zizo
Yeah,
Zos, I think.
impregnate. Yeah, I don't remember this guy's name, though, but. He needed to know. It was like if they filmed an episode of Maury Povich in a trailer in the desert somewhere in Los Angeles. That getting his results was like that.
Could you imagine if you did one of those like ancestry.com 23andMe and it turns out you're directly related to Charles Manson?
You're like, I'm not going to tell anyone about this one. Like, slowly burn it.
They should do a Manson fan. Maury Povich has, you know, he's retired, but he should do a special return. And it was only people who have been related to Manson family members and their DNA tests.
Yeah, via 23andMe.
When you guys were growing up, was that still like a specter that kind of loomed over, you know, as young people? Because even by the time I was like watching 80s daytime TV, it was still like Manson was still like the boogeyman.
I don't know. I don't think, you know, I mean, we were really early the pretend worship of Charles Manson as a philosopher for our times. And so I didn't know there was a movement. All I knew then that there were.
He's asking it, was he still scary? Was he the boogeyman?
Or were your parents, like, not necessarily your parents, but like, were kids' parents like terrified of this sort of like, because it seems like it was something that lasted for a long time and sort of this fear of youth culture, like certainly with the police response.
But Charlie would still do, like, he was always on, you know, like a chat show every couple years when he would be up for parole or something. I feel like, you know, he never left the public consciousness.
Mutated. He was no longer a scary figure, I don't think. I mean, how can you be afraid of someone who's in prison for the rest of his life?
But you're asking, Damien, but now I feel like, yeah, the question is more like, was there fear of youth culture, because like, are they're scary cult murderers or something, and was that part of, did we see that the mainstream fear of youth culture? I mean, the thing about the Manson thing is that the hippies were such a unique phenomena, and the end of the 60s was so, you know, it was a very, there just been all this like, was such a progressive time where mainstream America was changing so much, and there was so much skepticism that the hippies, that what happened with the Manson family was such a unique thing. I mean, by the 80s, when we were growing up, I think that it was now becoming, like, for us at least, we were learning that it wasn't the youth culture you need to worry about, it was the cops. And that they were sinister, and that they were, our parents witnessed, you know, full blown abuse of power at the Elks Lodge riot, with the whole, you know, riot squad showing up to like this pathetic little gig. So, you know.
And I think that for us, like the Manson family was, we kind of looked at them like the original cast of SCTV. You know, they were all had their place and their position.
You mean like they all have, so you mean like they each had their own fan group, and they had their own personalities? They were like the Beatles. There was the smart one, the shy one.
Yeah, and the you know, the funny one, the cool one, the cute one.
They're like the Monkees. Yeah, well, I don't know about that. I mean, is that the way you felt about them? I mean, did you have a crush on the Manson girls growing up, Jeff?
Well, I just thought they were, you know, the old, I wasn't at all afraid of them, and I liked the way they were presented, and I loved the connection with the Beatles, and I loved the kind of like, they were original trollers, you know, the way they trolled the media, which was really funny because, you know, being a prankster. But yeah, I mean, I felt the way, I liked the girls the most. I didn't really care about Charlie and or Tex Watson or those people. I found the girls most interesting. And I felt that they were interested in the way that the original Saturday Night Live ladies and the original SCTV girls were interesting. And I don't know what that is, but I guess it's a certain charisma. I like funny people.
Yeah.
I like
But I
fighting
mean,
women.
yeah,
Fighting
yeah.
women.
Tex is the one who was in the porno film Ramrodder, right? I think it's called like the Western,
Oh,
like.
I don't know about that. It must be a newer
A new one.
No,
Wait, Tex what?
this is back into
Tex
something
Watson?
weird. Yeah, like I know Bobby Beausoleil had the connection to Love, right?
And to Kenneth
Yeah,
Anger.
yeah. And he was, yeah, Kenneth Anger
And Kenneth
and all that.
Anger.
He was a musician.
Yeah, and I think Tex is then the one who's in, like, I think it's called Ramrodder, and it was like
He
something
was a
weird.
porn star?
No, it's like a softcore, like, porno film that I guess was shot maybe on the ranch, and
I mean that would predate Deep Throat, and
So he said softcore.
yeah, softcore. It's
Or Emmanuel.
yeah, it's like it was like something weird video had in the catalog. Like this is back in, you know, sort of the late 90s, early 2000s era of Manson research, I guess.
We just listened to a good Manson book in the car the other day. I forget the name of it, but it's about the CIA connection and those acid tests that went down. That did you know this theory?
Chaos with the MK
Yeah,
Ultra
chaos.
theory.
Yeah. What do you think of that? Do you know about this book?
I do. I haven't read it. That's what there's a new like Netflix, like Errol Morris made a like docu-series from that book. I know lots of people are super into it, and then I know lots of people who are like, this is utter bullshit, including Andrew Hickey just thinks that that whole book is like, I don't know if you've listened to the sort of somewhat endless Manson Beach Boys episodes of History of Rock and 500 Songs, but he does not think he doesn't think highly of that chaos book, and you know, I tend to trust him.
I tend to have problems with Andrew Hickey on a personal level,
I know
but I know that he did give us a shout out on the Manson
he did.
episode.
I
So
love like he was talking about like bands that have covered Manson songs, and I think Red Cross was like maybe like the first band he mentioned, and I was just like, oh my God, this is like Red Cross gets mentioned on Andrew Hickey. It was very exciting.
I think
Well,
we were the set. We were the. It's safe to say we were the second band to cover Charles Manson
who
songs.
was the first? The
Beach
Beach
Boys.
Boys. No, but they didn't cover Manson. They ripped off Manson because,
Well,
they circle jerks Manson.
it's a
yeah,
different.
it was more of like a Falling James situation. They stole that song, didn't they? Or they paid for it or something, but they underpaid or, well, actually, it's not a very good, I mean, or whatever. I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's not the greatest track for them, I don't think, but,
But you're saying you were the first band that like were, you know, purposely covering a Charles Manson song and being open about it.
But I don't think anyone else had ever done it. We also had other mentors too. Like, early, we learned about a different side of the Manson family via early John Waters and Rodney Bingenheimer, who actually hung out with them. So yeah, it was we were coming from a different place.
So did Don Bowles, right? Like after Manson went to prison, but like he said he hitchhiked up for it with Frank Discussion from the Feeders from Arizona and hung out with Squeaky and the
Oh,
family.
I totally believe it. Now, Squeaky and Sandra Good were a whole other story. I mean, like, the Squeaky book, the book Squeaky, the biography of Squeaky from Lynette Squeaky from, which was heavily researched, and she actually, although she didn't participate in it, she said it was very accurate and well researched. Forget while reading that book that I wasn't reading a Patti Smith biography. There was so much just eccentric rock and rollism in some of the cast members who were way more interesting than the star of the show.
Oh my God. Yeah. Wait, no, but she wrote a book of her own. So you're saying there's a biography, but there's also an autobiography, right?
Yeah, no, the autobiography, the Squeaky from autobiography, isn't that, didn't she write that in prison? And then there's a book on tape and we couldn't get through it because there was some fa Squeaky fan who did the book on tape version and it was
Oh
just
yeah.
insane.
Oh yeah. Someone read the book as I like audiobooks. That's my favorite medium, but my favorite format. But I tried to listen to it. It's on YouTube. Give it a shot. But yeah, the rarely does the narration ever impede my enjoyment, but that narration was intense. I just have to listen, but it was like, see, whoever read it had some kind of deep relationship with the words, the written words in that book, that I found distracting.
She was caressing each idea and thought with every.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was filled with so much like reverence, but it was also like there was like a darkness to it. Was hard to It's hard to explain, but it's worth checking out maybe. But
I think the reverence explains the darkness right there. I don't think you need to go any further. It had a reverence. You know what this though opens up the door for? You need to Red Blood Cells that shit and do your own audiobook of it.
Well, it's funny. It's funny that you should say red blood cells, because I was just thinking when we were talking about, back to Manson for 1 second, when we were talking about the first band to do Manson or whatever, like we did that in 81, I guess, would have been around the time that we first started covering Charlie. And so that was only 11 years after the whole deal. And I was thinking, like, 11 years, that's nothing. I mean, like, 11 years ago, the White Stripes had already broken up. You know what I mean? Or 11 years ago, like, time flies now. But I mean, like, it doesn't seem like. So, what is this? 2025? So, 2014? It's like, what was going on in 2014? Like, that's yesterday.
You and
And
me were playing at New York for Vice 21.
exactly. Yeah, you and I were doing a hardcore band.
We were
We did
recording
this
that episode together.
podcast.
We did
Yeah,
the
I mean,
episode.
right. That's the episode was 2014, right? Or
Yeah.
2015, 2014?
Yeah, exactly. That was like yesterday. And so that kind of blows my mind now with this perspective, from 2025's perspective, to think like in 1981 we were only like 11 years away from those things that happened. And but when you're a kid, it seems like it was a million years ago, or it was a prehistoric time, but it wasn't at all.
So I guess going back to that hardcore stuff we were talking about earlier, growing up, or I mean, like when you guys were, when hardcore was kind of happening, you guys would have had none of the no relationship to the stuff that like Andrew was growing up with in New York.
Well, I guess we would have. I mean, with what
We
he
would
was
have
going, we
New
would
York
have
hardcore stuff of the
played
late
with.
80s, mid to late 80s New York hardcore.
Well, not mid to late 80s, no,
Not
but
now.
early 80s, he would have played with some of those bands if they had made their way out to the West Coast at like Godzilla's or something.
I always say when I see flyers of you guys, there's certain bands, like it makes sense when you guys play with the Southern California hardcore bands because you're all coming up, whatever, TSOL or Circle One or whatever makes sense. But it's like when you guys are on bills with like MDC or like Battalion of Saints or Toxic Reasons or something, it always just really makes me laugh because I can't even, I mean, I assume you probably weren't even watching those bands or like that you said like,
Nah,
what'd you think of
no.
MDC? Like, there's no way you were hanging out and
Yes.
watching like
I'm sorry. I know we don't have those moments. It's like opening up for the Doors, but not bothering to see the headlining band,
right.
you know?
Like the
And I'm
SSD
sorry.
control, like you guys in SSD control
No,
was always just one
I
of
know.
those like
No,
hilarious comments.
sadly, no, sadly, every one of those experiences probably would have been like, we would have shown up with this defensive chip on our shoulder. And it would have been all about like surveying the landscape, getting the vibe on like what the organizers, how they're treating the, like each band, like basically who gets to call the shots today. That would have been our only interaction with those bands. And usually we were, it always felt like, once again, chip on my shoulder. It always felt like we were getting, cheated somehow. And that, oh, fuck that band. Just because they are from wherever, they get to play at 11 o'clock. And, and then that just would have been our interaction with them. It's sad to say, but I think that's the most honest, answer.
But at some point you let that go, Stephen. Like I feel like I would never be able to let that go. But like I feel like, but you at some point have to let that go because like by the time I meet you, you're like hanging out with all these young bands, producing young bands. You were like fucking doing a Beck record. Like you would have had to surrender that, I guess, at some point and been like, I'm just going to be a part of this.
What do you mean? I eventually joined a hardcore band. I was a founding member of a hardcore band in my 40s.
But I mean, like, I mean, even before that, I mean, like, just like the sense of having that chip on your shoulder where you like,
oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I was a teenager, you know. I mean, I think that's my equivalent of like the bad attitude teenager. I think in dealing as a teenager, I was actually a really nice kid, friendly and accommodating. But amongst my peer group, I was defensive and paranoid. Yeah. And my peer group, unfortunately, was the hardcore scene, I think, at that time.
Because, like, the thing that I find interesting is, like, watching the documentary, like, outside of the music and outside of that stuff, is the relationship between siblings and having sort of, like, a close creative relationship with my brother. I think anyone that has a close creative relationship with a sibling is going to take a lot out of the movie. Because, like, obviously you guys have a very, like, hugely, you know, rich history of working together, but just like the differences between you guys and the differences between the way you kind of, I don't know, like approach things, maybe is the wrong way to put it, but like kind of like interact with music, I think is I found interesting.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, I don't know how Jeff would characterize his interaction with music, but yeah, it's true. Damien, like what you were getting at about me being this insular defensive dude as a teen, but by the time you met me, I was very outgoing and open-minded and interested in what people were doing. But in general, it's probably still, at this point, I was interested in what younger than me people were doing. I still hate my peer group. If you're my age, I'm going to like get into it with you. No, I'm kidding. But I think it has always kind of been a little bit of yeah, I don't know. Anyways, at some point I found it, it was part of what I needed to do after, when the band kind of went on hiatus and then Jeff and I kind of went on our own, career wise, went our own separate ways for a while. I kind of took a swan dive into the scene. I'm kind of a social person. And I think Jeff was maybe went through a longer period of being not so interested in what was going on in the musical landscape, the current musical landscape. Is that wrong to say that?
I'm interested, but yeah, I don't, maybe not really.
Well, you were interested from afar. Like I remember at some point I kind of became the person that would say, hey man, you should check out this or that.
Yeah. But I remember you calling me from a club saying, oh yeah, I'm checking out this band, the White Stripes. You'd probably really like them. But you turned me on to them, like when they were still in clubs.
So there you go. And
I didn't have to go out there, and so you were good about that.
Yeah, I've always kind of been like your you know, like a, what would Sounding that be
board.
Well, no, I'm thinking more like I'm like the hound that you send out in front to see if there's, I forget what you call that in these circles, but you know, or the what's the animal that the canary?
I also kind of the coal mine.
Yeah, I've always kind of been Jeff's canary in the coal mine. Like, why don't you go in there and see if it's safe? No, I'm kidding. But yeah, well, no, but yeah, well, here I am. I mean, look, this is kind of an example of it. Like, Jeff is in his nice living room enjoying Southern California, and I'm finding some shade in a Walmart parking lot in North Tampa right now. And so we're very different people that way.
But that brother, I mean, Damien, you are like, you know, I mean, it's the thing I'm always saying to people when they're like, when I'm trying to sell them on watching the movie, when they, you know, friends that aren't music fans, you know, certainly not like punk fans or whatever, I'm just like, do you have a sibling? Like, you know, that's, you're going to relate to it. It's, and I was just like, and I did, this is a big name drop, cause I don't get to name drop as much as these guys, but I did this, you know, I ran a show that starred Rev Run from Run DMC. And I talked to him, you know, we don't, you know, we keep in touch sporadically, but I was just talking to him and I was just like, Rev, like, I'm going to send you this movie I made. And I really think that you in particular are going to like it, because like you and Dee weren't brothers, but you were almost as close as brothers. And I feel like that Run and D relationship, probably he's going to relate to like the stuff that Jeff and Steve went through more than most people, because those guys were just like so close and had so much in common in so many ways, but were also just like so different. I mean, in the documentary that I don't know if you have seen, the Run DMC documentary, but like every time you see Daryl, he's in like a Motorhead shirt or a Ramones shirt or whatever, and it's just like they had to like work it out over so many years. It's not as happy an ending. Like, I don't think those guys speak, but I'm just like, I don't care that you're not like a punk rock fan. Like, you'll relate to this like business relationship that, that these guys have had.
Wait, did he watch it?
He hasn't watched it yet. It's gonna take me like
Oh, that's sad.
a little bit more nagging. I think he will eventually. I'm just gonna like keep after him, like, watch it, Reb, but not yet.
But that was a cool name drop, and you've never dropped that name around me. I had no idea you were Run DMC in crowd.
Yeah, we did this basically. There's this Netflix like sort of family show that was, it was like a Nickelodeon show, basically him and Justine, his real life wife and like kids. And it was sort of like a scripted version of that reality show Run's House that he had. But it was interesting because, I hadn't talked to him in a while, and he's like, I get recognized. His character on the show was Joey Washington. He was called Speed. It was like the clever way we changed his name. But he's like, I get recognized almost as much as Joey Washington as I do as Run, because like kids who watch that show and still, I guess, like grew up watching it, like don't even know. They're like, they don't even know it's Tricky. Like they know me as Joey Washington from All About the Washingtons, which was like
Wow.
crazy, because I thought we made the show and it just disappeared into the big Netflix like sea of content. But I guess like, kids watch it.
Yeah, it never goes away on that thing too, Netflix.
Yeah, it's there. If
It's
it the algorithm shows it to you, like,
And there's also the children's setting, so that's you're
yeah, there's
competing with
the
less.
Netflix kids. Yeah,
Yeah.
I feel like though, like, even not to compare this podcast to Red Cross, but I feel like even the way my brother books this podcast, in a way that I could never book this podcast, like, I love doing this
Right.
thing, but Tristan's the one who actually goes out there and is like reaching out. Like Billy Idol, who just came on the show, that took like 2 years of Tristan hitting Pete them up and then being like, no. And him and I, and the first time they said no to me, I'd be like, well, fuck Billy Idol for life then. I'm never asking again.
That's
My
me.
God,
Yes. I haven't heard that one yet. How did it turn out? I can't wait to listen.
It's pretty
It's
good.
good.
It's got some stuff in it. Like, he got real into it by the end of it. He's like real excited about talking about punk and like, he's like, I don't know, it was weird. I also got kind of strangely starstruck, because like, I'm like, oh yeah, they used to
Yeah.
like parody him in Mad Magazine and Cracked Magazine. Like, this was, like Madonna, Michael Jackson, and Billy Idol for when I
Well, he's
was young.
probably the most famous person you've had on the podcast, maybe, would you say?
No, our mutual friend Jack Black from the Minecraft movie, buddy.
All right.
Oh, okay. I don't even think of him. Yeah, right. That's true. Yeah. Our kids go to school together or whatever, but
Billy's up there. It was cool. There was some cool, like, just him
Sorry, I
talking
don't
about
mean to cut
like.
you off, Andrew, but what do you mean our friends go to school together? Dude, you were in his band. You're an ex
No,
band member.
I said our kids go to school together.
I know.
But well, okay, and they're another. Well, never mind. I don't want to frame that in a negative way. I had a great time playing with Tenacious D. I was in his band. That's true. I was another band I was a founding member of.
Yes. A low-key punk supergroup that doesn't get credit as being a punk supergroup, bringing together Vandals and Red Cross members.
And then that other band, but we're Nirvana.
Nirvana too. Yeah, so oh no, wait, he was in Scream. Dane Bramage. He was in Dane
Scream,
Bramage. Yeah.
that guy.
Yeah.
But that's true, Vandals, Warren, right?
Yeah. Those records and that show, Tenacious D, I put that on. I try and get my kids to watch it. They don't enjoy it. They like his current work a lot more, but I still like that show.
Well,
We
did
were.
you? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I would just say we were on one episode of Mad TV. That was a one time I. That's the one live document of my stint with them. But what were you going to say, Jeff?
I forgot.
Oh, fuck! Once again. No,
And
I
you
did.
guys know who was on the episode before Billy Idol was Dave Markey and Jordan Schwartz.
Right, I saw clips from that. I just saw it yesterday. I saw clips from it.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait,
right.
Right. Dave Markey and Jordan Schwartz, and they are they're probably promoting the Bill Bartel documentary, right?
Yes, and I feel like understanding, or not understanding, but like learning more about Bill Bartel. Like I knew Pat Fear, obviously, from White Cross, but like understanding this enigma.
White Flag.
White Flag. Sorry, White Flag, not White Cross. I'm getting
getting your hardcore mixed up.
Getting my coast confused. But, you know, like I knew him from White Flag, but hearing and seeing the breadth of the prank side of him, and just like the Punisher side, and just like the mischievous side, I felt like I got to understand you guys a little bit better, and knowing the community that you guys were a part of.
Yeah, well, that would, you know, there was a lot. Yeah, that prankster side was kind of a form of communication between some of us. You know, that's how we, you know, communicated. But in that film, the Bill Bartel film, I don't think they used one of his best pieces, which was the selling Madonna's garbage on eBay.
No, they didn't.
I mean, it was my idea, but this is a prime example. But he did the follow through, and he wrote a long description of like how you could request, you know, garbage from the blue can, you know, or lawn clippings, or you know, or recyclables, and it got a hit, and then instantly someone from Maverick Records put a cease and desist. It was pulled, but it was great because like, Madonna used to live in our neighborhood. So like, we're like, well, Madonna's trash goes out just like everyone else's. And Bill decided to put her garbage up for a sale on eBay.
Oh, it was her actual garbage.
Yeah, but he didn't he didn't collect the garbage yet. He was going to make it a custom order. Like, you can request from recycled, organic, you know, lawn clippings, or stuff from the various garbage. And he described, you know, potential items in the normal brown garbage, including one possibly Lourdes's diapers. And John Krupp has saved the original post. It should have been in the film, but yeah, obviously it only really exists in the form of the written word. But yeah, like, so that kind of stuff, you know, we live that kind of stuff daily, and that was, you know, one of the aspects that's how we can, you know, Bill and I and, you know, and various friends communicated, was through that kind of nonsense.
I think it's awesome because, like, I think it was on Stephen the first time you were on. You talked about prank calling Courtney Love at the McDonald's.
Oh, okay.
Back in the day,
I prank called her at a McDonald's, or she was at a McDonald's.
She was working at a McDonald's.
Oh well, that I don't know if that's true. She was working at a coffee house.
Yeah, she worked next door to the Pick Me Up.
She worked at like three, she would either, we knew like three different locations that she would be at. And, you know, it's pre-cell phone. So we would just, it was just one night. It was a one-time deal. And we called every one of these locations to kind of harass her. And now the whole thing was, I mean, it's really bad karma because it was, not bad karma, but it's, you know, we were doing it and we were doing it as not as ourselves, surprise, surprise. We were doing it as members of the defunct band, the Nymphs, which with the late Inger Laurie, who, you know, it was all in fun and games, but we were basically, one of the things we used to do is we used to try to create riffs between different bands. But that riff already existed because Courtney was already kind of like putting a hit, not a hit, but she was, you know, she was very critical of Inger at the time. So we were kind of striking back at Courtney as Inger's bandmate. We were really just trying to like anything we could find a spark. We would, you know, anywhere we could get some kind of reaction, we were trying. And that's what that was. But, you know, it was all fun and games. It was actually, you know, pretty intelligent crank calling. And I think it was kind of victimless crank calling for the most part. But But then I had beef for years because I was told by management that we weren't allowed to open for Nirvana because of those crank calls, which had happened like 8 years earlier. Whether or not that's true or not, we'll never know. Maybe if Jeff and I finally get on Billy Corgan's podcast, we can get to the bottom of this.
You keep saying Jeff and I.
It's a package
I
deal,
think
buddy.
you should do Billy Corgan's podcast. I think you have the relationship.
Well, clearly I can keep the conversation going on my own, but I think I'd have more fun with you and whatever. But fine. You're not invited.
Do you think like dating Courtney Love is when Billy Corgan like got into cool stuff? Because he just seems
But
like a
Jeff.
guy who seems like. Like to me, the Smashing Pumpkins are like what a heavy metal band would sound like if you took everything heavy out of it.
Weren't they from Tampa originally, or they were from St. Pete?
Am I in the land of Corgan? Maybe now is when I should be reaching out to him.
This is a great advertisement for the Billy Corgan podcast.
Yeah, sorry.
It's okay.
It's okay.
Listen
Well,
at
I
your own
really
peril.
The Billy get back to the Billy Corgan podcast for just 1 second. I've been very tempted, but I haven't really had the nerve yet to click on the Billy Corgan Corey Feldman episode.
Oh yeah, what's that about? Yeah, that did intrigue me. But right, so did Billy Corgan bring Corey Feldman on tour or something? Is that where that crazy video
No.
came from?
No, he just brands him as a true genius. And no, Billy Corgan, I mean, Corey Feldman did a tour with
Limp
what's that
Bizkit.
band? Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's where all that crazy video of him fake shredding comes from.
Yeah,
That
yeah, yeah,
okay, right. But Billy Corgan is putting it out there that
yeah.
Feldman's a genius.
I guess. But I love the fact that we have said the name Billy Corgan probably at least 500
It's
times
like
in
a
this.
drinking game now.
Well,
You have to
look.
count it.
Okay, well, first, before anything, like I know it's best to kind of put this stuff conversationally or whatever, but we do kind of have an agenda with this podcast today, aside from having the fun that we're having. Our documentary that we did with Andrew Reich, Born Innocent, the Red Cross story, that he's so lovingly and brilliantly crafted this very watchable 90-minute telling of our 45-year story. It's currently available for rental online. Is that true, Andrew?
That is true at redcrossfilm.com/rent.
And so we should just get that out of the way. I mean, not saying that we
I
can't
do
talk
that in
about
the
it
beginning,
more,
you guys.
but like,
I do an intro where I promote the fucking thing. That's the way this podcast
okay.
works.
Look, I appreciate Steve's diligence in in
Just want to make
hawking
sure
our
we can.
wares.
I just want to make sure we cover it, and then but I'm curious, has there been positive feedback? Are people enjoying their rental experience, or what's going on with all that? I'm on the road. I have no idea.
I've been getting nothing but positive feedback, and I think it takes a long time for word to get out. That especially it's available worldwide, so Australians and Spaniards and people in Japan, like anyone can, anyone can watch the movie. But yeah, it's been and what's cool too is this, like I'm still I mean, I'm not making these people pay to rent it, but like I just heard from Mark Arm yesterday, who finally saw it and loved it, which is really cool because Mark hadn't seen it. I just sent Ron Reyes a link because I just thought of Ron, and I was just like, Ron probably hasn't seen it, so it's cool the people that are in the movie just finally like there's still there's still some folks that are in it, like who I mean, Dez finally saw it at the Grammy Museum. That was Damien, I wish you could have been at that screening because it was just like Dez gave everyone sort of stood up during the Q&A, took over the Q&A for a bit, and like you got Dez Kadena just sort of taking everyone through what a typical like day of being in Red Cross was like during his stint in the band, which was amazing.
It was my favorite part of the evening. I think it does, in case you're a turned out a punk avid listener, thank you for taking the bull by the horns in that moment. And that was a really fun addition to the evening.
Drinking screwdrivers with Jeff and Steve's parents, and then
It would have been more.
Watching Billy Jack.
Yeah. That's what he claims. My parents did not drink screwdrivers. They would have maybe made him a gin martini. That is entirely possible.
Okay.
Well, at the screening in Toronto, it was Chris Murphy, Danko Jones, and I. Like, you had all these guys that can't leave the house any other time, but they all wanted to come see the Red Cross documentary.
Yeah.
And I do feel bad that Chris, you know, and Jay did get cut out of the movie, because, you know, I love that band so much.
What? You cut Sloan out of our movie? You're putting them into the extras, right?
You know what? Maybe I will.
Maybe. Oh my God.
It's tough with these extras that I've been working on. Is a little bit like, where do you stop? There's so much that could go in there. And the one thing I haven't, I mean, I could do a little Sloan bonus feature. The one thing I haven't tackled yet is trying to like see if like, can I tackle the like 8 hours of Robert Hecker interview footage and try and like boil that down to some kind of manageable special.
No, make that a bonus disc, an 8 hours
just
disc.
A disc of just the unexpurgated Robert Hecker interview.
Or it's your next documentary.
Yeah, just that.
It's a fascinating subject.
It is amazing. I mean, it's just hard, you know, it's an incredible thing to watch. Robert's the best.
No, the movie's unbelievable. Like, a thing that also, like, knowing the story, and I don't mean to exploit your trauma for entertainment, but, like...
Oh, let's do it!
The way that your story about being kidnapped is told in the movie, where you have Don Bowles kind of, like, being like, Steven had a bit of a chicken hawk thing going on, and the whole...
The cougars thing going on.
And the audience is laughing, and then it's just like the story unfolds, and all of a sudden you just feel like the wind being sucked out of the theater as everyone's realizing, like, oh shit, this isn't funny at all.
Yeah, it's a thing I always feel a little bit bad having, you know... That line is funny when Don says it. No, and people don't know what's coming. Like, no one knows what's about to happen. But I also kind of every screening I like to stay and just see that.
See the
vibe shift, you know, from and you know, it's, you know, and it's interesting because that is Don's, like, that's definitely Don's memory, is that there were, you know, a lot of these older women on the scene were like, had the hots for little Steve. You know, Keith Morris was, you know, he sort of thought like that it was more maternal than cougar, you know, the feeling of those women. And, you know, I wasn't there. I don't know. It was probably somewhere in the middle, you know.
Yeah, they wanted to suckle me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's an important way to tell that story, because I think until you know the reality of the situation, it is romanticized. Like, and that's what it was the first time we did that episode, you know, like that whole time I'm like, yeah, you're the kid. You're like the kid who's like living all our dreams and like doing this shit. And you're like, yeah, it's cool, but there's also this. And that moment, having that in the movie, I think it's really important to kind of say that, like, punk is this amazing place, and this is this like great thing for young people to find, but there are people that make it not so great. And that's the reality.
Sure. It's a cautionary tale of sorts, but it's a cautionary tale, but don't worry. There's plenty of Brady Bunch and Bell Bottoms still.
If that's what you're in it for, you'll come away satisfied. If
you're into it for the David Cassidy of it all, don't worry. You won't be disappointed.
It'll deliver. But, I do think, yeah, the other, you know, you were saying that, like, the Bill Bartels, you know, Born Innocent and the Secret Lives of Bill Bartel is a great double feature. But the other one I think would be cool at some point, and I haven't seen it yet, is the Harley Flanagan movie, and this just as like sort of like tales of teenage punks, you know. But yeah. I mean, I'm dying to see the Harley movie. I haven't seen it yet.
It's interesting how when you compare, because I've been talking to you about this for years, Stephen, like, I'd love someone to do like an overview of just about kids in punk scenes, like this sort of Peter Pan world where everyone's the same age and it's super fun. And then you talk to these people that actually live through it. And like, it could be terrifying. And I think a lot of it comes down to family structure and the family structure you had outside of the punk scene and what that was like. Like Harley talks about how tough it was for his mom and how she wasn't necessarily able to be there for him at different times and how he had to rely on this scene to be his family. But that can lead to like weird things happening. And I think
you guys have a strong Harley family. Harley and I had very different backgrounds, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like I come from a strong nuclear suburban family and Harley's mom, wasn't Harley like sort of in, he was in, his mom was somehow involved in the heart of happening downtown Manhattan or something, right? Or was she a stylist or something? No, did she do?
She was like 15 and did a Warhol screen test.
Exactly. So she was part of that factory scene as a teenager.
Didn't Janet McDonald do a Warhol screen test too?
No, she was West Coast. She was more like Ed Ruscha Muse. She hung with Janet McDonald did not. No, we grew up in the suburbs of LA and had more of like we were more over the edge
kids that grew up in the suburbs, the kids that grew up in the cities are always more feral. I mean, it would have than the suburban kids. We at least had our toe in a safe place, whereas all of our friends who grew up in New York were like crazy.
Yeah.
As children.
You guys had pretty crazy existence too. I think you guys were just able to kind of, well, I don't know, like
there was, but it wasn't outside our front door. It was, we had to, it was harder to,
we get had to seek it out. We had to seek the crazy out. And just our sheer will got us into, questionable environments.
One thing that didn't make the movie, but Andrew and I talked about it last time on the podcast, was the Quentin Tarantino stuff, which I find.
Oh yeah. Who recently officially snubbed us. It's official. He has refused to participate in the DVD. He doesn't want it to be on the record that we influenced him.
Yeah, I did. Jamie and I reached out like after talking to you about it. I was just like, you know what? Like this Blu-ray is going to come out. Like it'd be so cool to just like present him with all these things to like confirm or deny or whatever, and just have it be especially. And I got a firm no, not interested.
Yeah, which I have to say really disappoints me because he was so salt of the earth when we knew him back in the day. And I don't know. I mean, I typically don't. I find it distasteful when people call others out seriously publicly. But I think that's an example of like, dude, like, give me a break. We were like core crew. At the very least, have us on your like video archives podcast. It would be funny kicks, I don't know. But I mean, like what our claim is that that we were name checked in the original script of Pulp Fiction, and you can find the original script of Pulp Fiction, and Red Cross is name checked, and they were supposed to put one of our songs in the movie, and then it eventually didn't end up in the movie. But then we also heard through the grapevine that all that banter between the gangsters in Reservoir Dogs about the different phases of Madonna that was lifted directly from a conversation that Quentin had with Jeff McDonald. And Jeff left the room as I grind this axe. But because Jeff is much more tasteful than tactful than I am. But, I'm going to officially on the air call bullshit. Quentin, you're a pussy. You should have us. You should get on camera on the mic and deny or confirm what we're saying, because it's all innocuous. It's all just whatever. But I get the sense that it's like a status game of sorts. It's like we're not fabulous enough for him. I would think he is so fabulous at this point that his fabulousness is untouchable. It doesn't matter who he's hanging out with. He's in no danger. But I get the sense that he's sort of like, I don't want to slump. It's hard for me not to interpret it that way. That he's like, I don't have time for that loser shit. And like, fuck you, dude. Whoa. Okay, sorry.
I think also that story about
bad vibes.
Well, the Madonna.
This is the point where Jeff. This is the point where Jeff should say, "Steve, are you bitter? It sounds like it."
Say nothing.
Jeff's just floating above it.
Well, because they cop to that, taking the dialogue from Jeff on their podcast, right? Like his buddy said that they got that. You know, there's a clip of it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, come on, those are choice. You know, fucking. Those were. What do you call that? They were mining pearls out of Jeff McDonald and pearls of humorous wisdom. And no one's like trying to like, you know, get a piece of, it's not about getting writing credit or residuals or anything. It's just, give me a break, dude.
Some South Bay solidarity is all we're looking for. Just, you know. Yeah.
And then the reality is, like, I probably live a 5 minutes drive from him. We're not even asking him to, like, you know, slum it and drive back down to the South Bay where he grew up, you know? It's like, whatever. Anyways, I'm grinding an axe. And maybe, I guess I haven't accepted the no. Maybe that's what's going on here. I'm trying to change that no. So if there's any way the words I'm saying right now reopens this topic for discussion, we hold no ill will. We are quick to forgive, and it would be good times. But Quentin really should reconsider that. You know, Andrew's still working on the extra footage for the DVD. So even if you know he would make an exception and do a Zoom interview for you, Quentin, and you know. Don't let your agents make these decisions for you, dude. Grow a pair.
Goddamn right. You know?
So many people said yes, obviously. There's so many people in the movie. And then, like, I'm guilty of this, too, of just focusing on, like, the couple people, you know, who's, you know, whatever. The Henry Rollins, the Quentin Tarantino. Just like, come on. Like, why? Like, why not?
Well, Rollins, I understand. We have been unfairly mean to him for years, and he has every right to snub us. And in fact, I would feel guilty if he was in it and saying nice things, because I think the grounds in which we said snarky things about him. They haven't aged well.
Yeah. So, all right. He's, you know what, by the way, I think I can say this on the record, a cool thing that I just learned. So our mutual friend, Ben Merlis was at Ian MacKay's birthday in LA a week, and Zach De La Rocha was there, and Ben was talking to Zach, and Zach's a huge Red Cross fan and was talking about how he heard Kill Someone You Hate on Rodney, and it blew his mind, and he loved it. And he was like, I would have loved to have been in that documentary. And I was kind of like, I would never have thought, oh, when I'm thinking of people like, oh, I'm sure Zach De La Rocha is a Red Cross fan. Like, it would not have occurred to me. Big Red Cross fan. Bummed he's not in the movie.
Is that the singer of Rage Against the Machine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's hilarious, because he was the inspiration for Jeff's, or one of the inspirations for Jeff's web soap opera about our, like before you did your documentary, Jeff told our story in a video format in a, like a very early web soap. What would you call it? Like continuing serial called Bitchin' Ass. And in that, Jeff was basically reframing the history of the band. Some of it was true, most of it wasn't. But the story he was telling, and it was during the time of our hiatus. And Jeff had said in this show, he had sort of imagined us as all those years. We weren't a punk band or a glam band or whatever. We were a Christian rock band, and that we had broken up not because we just needed space and we need to like grow up as human beings. We broke up because one of us wanted to make secular music. And it was Jeff that had decided to make secular music, and I had a problem with that. And Jeff's main inspiration was Rage Against the Machine's recent success. And he said that he wanted to be, was it something like the communists have all the cash or something? But I forget what your lines were, but you were directly referencing Rage Against the Machine. Am I right about, am I getting that wrong, Jeff?
No. Yeah. It was like, you know, yeah, I wanted to be communist, like Rage Against the Machine, because that's where the money was.
Because they lived in our neighborhood and you would see him driving his Volvo to the local Albertsons and that inspired you, right?
I don't remember. That was so many years ago.
Oh!
Well, there, Andrew, there goes Zach DeLaRocca being on the DVD.
So that was early 2000s or something around the, but that's so funny. Yeah. Who knew? Well,
he was in Hard Stance. Cool. He was in Inside Out. He's like Orange County punk hardcore royalty.
That's the thing. Oh, I knew he was like a hardcore kid, but that, you know, the hardcore kids aren't all Red Cross fans, you know. So it's just like, that's what I think was surprising. I was thinking at like, you know, Ian and Kevin Seconds did this thing at Brain Dead Studios here, just and which was so great, and it was kind of like, you know, whatever. Sean Stern was there, and London May from Samhain, and it was just sort of, you know, it was very and I was saying, like, and I was loving it, and it was one of those moments where I was just like, I wonder if this would be at all interesting to Jeff and Steve, like, because it's so much like hardcore, you know, tales of like going to see the Necros and Mommy and stuff, and like I was just like, this would probably not really mean that much to those guys.
I mean, yeah, sadly, we're kind of East Coast illiterate.
But also, there's this thing that's like, there's like a sense of humor and self-awareness that, like, you wouldn't want Minor Threat to have that. And I guess they do have it towards the end when they're kind of like, you know, doing these sort of self-referential comedy songs. But like, I think Red Cross was always a lot more self-aware than hardcore allows you to be. Like, it's really hard to be.
There was always a sense of humor. And it's funny because, like, Ian is really funny. Like, I mean, he's a great raconteur and so, you know, telling so many funny stories. But you don't think of Minor Threat or Fugazi as, like, funny bands.
No. There's and also, like, he doesn't necessarily, like, he hates the Misfits because he thought they were too.
Oh, they're like a costume band, like a comedy costume band to him.
Yeah, he's not.
Did you see them at Coachella, Jeff? Did you stay up for the Misfits?
Oh, no. I beat the traffic on the Misfits. But I saw a little bit on television.
Wait, okay, so just to clarify, Jeff wanted to beat the traffic and he didn't watch the Misfits. And I am I'm very disappointed that he wasn't supporting the local hardcore scene.
Well, I heard they were hilarious. I heard they were hilarious. They were, you know, good.
I think once you're at Coachella, you don't have to worry about the local hardcore scene.
I don't know whether, you know, if he was in Bergen County, New Jersey, it's the local hardcore scene. You know?
They're from, dude, you got to support the scene. Okay,
they're
sorry.
From Lodi. They're from next to Hackensack, where my parents are from.
I think a couple are Trump donors, too. So, like, you know, it's like.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway, guys, this has been amazing. And in any configuration, if one, two, or three of you ever want to come back on the show, you know you're always welcome.
Oh, thank you. Is Billy Corgan welcome?
I cannot find a single punk connection.
Wow. That's incredible.
Wow.
Really? Well, okay.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.